So hi, Tracy, and welcome to Reengineering Men's Health Over 40, the show where, with the help of expert guests like yourself, we unpack the science to reveal the secrets of health, fitness, and longevity for men over 40. Guys, Dr. Tracy Gappin is a board-certified urologist, fellow of the American College of Surgeons, and director of the Gappin Institute for Precision Medicine. As director of the Gappin Institute for Precision Medicine, he incorporates diagnostics, personalized data, and cutting-edge science to transform men's health, performance, and vitality. With over 30 years of experience dedicated to improving men's health, he's a thought leader and world-renowned expert in this space, and as well as being the author of two best-selling books, Male 2.0 and Codes of Longevity. Tracy, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks so much. Glad to be here with you finally.
Thank you. And personally, can I just say how excited I am to explore your comprehensive approach to men's health? It makes a refreshing change from all the hacks and the band-aid solutions social media tends to bombard us with.
Well, we're going to have a fun talk, I'm sure.
Yeah. So yes, Tracy, if I might, I'd like to begin with your hard-hitting TEDx talk, the Men's Health Crisis.
Yeah.
It doesn't paint a pretty picture. Testosterone levels have been in free fall over these past 20 years. Fertility rates and sperm count are half of what they once were. A staggering 75% of men are either overweight or obese. Even the life expectancy gap between men and women is widening. This certainly would constitute a health crisis. How did we get here? And secondly, why is this not getting the attention it deserves?
Yeah. So how do we get here? I think it's complacency. You know, there. First of all, you have to look at why. Why are levels declining? Why do we see that testosterone levels, free and total, are about half what they were 20, 30 years ago? And there's a lot of culprits. We could look at, you know, stress. We could look at poor lifestyle in terms of nutrition, sedentary lifestyle, poor sleep, some micronutrient deficiencies, all of these aspects that can certainly affect men's health testosterone. But I believe without question, the literature clearly supports that toxins in our environment, endocrine disruptors, is the fancy term for it, are what I believe are the biggest culprit when it comes to the plummeting testosterone levels we are seeing. And it's in our drinking water. It's in our food. It's in our personal care products. It's everywhere around us. And so there's this lack of awareness, first of all, lack of understanding. There's a lot of financial incentive as well, especially in the, you know, the consumer brand industry and the food industry, to use these chemicals that can save them a buck, but are particularly harmful to us. And there's a lack of understanding of how this is really affecting us. And so I think it's a combination of factors that are really coming together. It's lack of awareness, understanding, and there's some unscrupulous activities, not caring for financial reasons as well.
Yeah, I know you've spoken often of endocrine disruptors being perhaps the principal culprit here. But perhaps I'd also like to look at some of the other lifestyle factors that may influence this. Obviously, you also mentioned in your TEDx talk the sort of the 75% of men that are either overweight or obese. And it's well documented that the overweight and obese are at greater risk of cardiovascular disease and metabolic disorders. But it's less well known that there exists this bidirectional relationship between obesity and testosterone, whereby weight loss can produce those increases in testosterone levels.
But is
that down to the conversion of testosterone to estrogen, referred to as aromatization? Would that account for these increases in testosterone levels?
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. So there is, and I look at this triangle actually of testosterone, low testosterone, chronic inflammation, and poor metabolic health. Okay, the three of them that all contribute to cardiovascular disease. So each of those individually, low testosterone, we know that testosterone is critically important for metabolism, energy, cognitive function, mood, drive, confidence, bone density, bone health, ability to build muscle, burn fat. Of course, it has sexual benefits as well, but it also directly affects inflammation. So testosterone is an anti-inflammatory. And so a lot of men have, you know, metabolic syndrome. It includes low testosterone. It also includes chronic systemic inflammation, which is really a concept that's not really talked about much. Mm-hmm. Inflammation is, you know, when you skin your knee, when you have the flu, when you're sick, when you have an illness, you know, you have acute inflammation. And mm-hmm. that's simply your immune system helping your body heal itself. And that's normal. That we need that. Without that, we would all die. And so our immune system is critical, and acute inflammation is particularly helpful. Chronic inflammation is when that process persists over a long period of time, unregulated, uncontrolled, and it could be from any stressor to our system. So psychological stress is one of those stressors, but there's also physical stressors such as things like poor sleep, things like mm-hmm. too much alcohol, things like poor quality food intake, gut health issues. A big trigger for inflammation in our body is gut health problems that men don't even realize are occurring. And I'm not talking about cramping or irregular bowels or stuff like that where, you know, guys say, no, I'm fine. I don't have any symptoms. I'm not talking about that at all. I'm talking about microbiome. I'm talking about the balance of the microbes in your gut that actually drive your immune system mm-hmm. and is a direct driver for inflammation. Your microbiome controls your hormone production, your neurotransmitters in your brain, your energy systems, your metabolism. It's tied to longevity. And no one's even looking at the microbiome, and that's a big driver for inflammation. So stressors to our system can include things like the microbiome, as well as psychological stress and poor sleep and alcohol and poor food, and even overtraining can cause chronic inflammation. Mm-hmm. The mm-hmm. third part of that triangle I mentioned is metabolic health, and that's blood sugar control, to put it very simply. And this is not just for diabetics. You know, we realize that in the past, we would think of you either as you're diabetic or you're not, black or white, yes or no, but it's not quite so clear cut. There's a spectrum of insulin resistance or insulin sensitivity, and that is how mm-hmm. well does your body process and regulate your blood sugar. And so all of these contribute to obesity and ultimately contribute to lipid, you know, your lipid profile, and ultimately to cardiovascular profile. And so, yes, when you are obese, your testosterone, the low testosterone you already have, is getting converted into estrogen, which is yep. making it even worse without question. But it's also the confluence of all these other factors that are kind of coming together as well that are promoting the obesity. And so this is why a lot of times when you solve the inflammation, when you fix the blood sugar and help people, men especially, lose weight, you'll find the testosterone levels actually do improve just by doing all of that. But sometimes it's a catch 22. Which one do you address first?
Yeah, exactly. The estrogen, the conversion to estrogen, as you mentioned, the little testosterone you got being converted to estrogen. I think it's not even the garden variety of estrogen either, is it? It's the sort of the uber estrogen, which is estradiol. I think that is right in saying that.
Yeah, so great point here. So testosterone gets metabolized in our body, gets broken down into estradiol, okay, or E2 is a short term we use for it. But estradiol is a natural, normal hormone in our body, and men actually need estrogen. So a lot of men think that, oh, estrogen is the enemy, and I got to block estrogen. I heard it's bad. I want high testosterone, low estrogen. And that's not quite the case. It's harmful when you have high estrogen and low testosterone, which is that picture that you painted of, you know, the obesity-driven conversion of testosterone to estrogen. But estradiol is actually a healthy, normal hormone that you know, all the cardiovascular benefits that we see of testosterone is probably more related to the estrogen metabolism breakdown, and the estradiol is what's providing that benefit.
Okay, interesting.
And then estradiol gets converted into estrone, and that's how our body excretes estrogen, you know, through that pathway as well. So estrone is another pathway we look at on, like, Dutch hormone testing, for example, to look at the metabolites of testosterone.
Yeah, circling back to that triangle and inflammation, it does obviously gather around the abdominal area, the abdominal fat, particularly in men. And the stark reality is that as that waistline expands, the more womanlike, the more feminized our hormonal profile becomes. Would that be a fair assessment of these changes in hormonal shifts that happen with inflammation around the abdomen?
Yeah, absolutely. We do see that for sure. Yeah, you're exactly right. And there's this concept of visceral fat that I think is important to point out here. So visceral fat is a different type of fat. It's the fat around your organs. It's on the inside. It's not your love handles. You can't pinch or see this fat. And while subcutaneous fat, love handles are harmful as well. The visceral fat's the dangerous fat. That's the fat where you're aggressively converting testosterone into estrogen, and that can cause the imbalance we're talking about, where you have too much estrogen in relation to testosterone. That's where you're promoting inflammation. That's where you do have increased cardiovascular risk as well.
And I suppose that's also where that visceral fat is where the triglycerides, the excess triglycerides could gather around the liver. And then we're in danger of non-alcoholic fatty liver disease.
Yeah, you're exactly right. So now you're talking about, you know, insulin resistance that connects, you know, when you have insulin resistance, you'll often see high triglycerides. And one of the end products of that, downstream effects of that, is a fatty liver, correct?
I mean, obviously, correlation, as we know, doesn't imply causation. But is it any coincidence then that as testosterone levels have plummeted, so the average weight of men has dramatically increased over these past 30, 40 years? I read some statistic to say that I think in 1960, the average US male was 168 pounds. And I think he's around 200 pounds today.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right that there's a real correlation there. It certainly can't claim causation. So I'm always careful in my language here that there's a very strong correlation between all of these factors that we're seeing in men, especially once they pass 50 and even after 40, where we see men have low testosterone, and often they don't even realize it. You know, that they compensate, they overcome it. They think, yeah, this is just a natural part of aging, and I'm stressed out, I'm busy at work. So they accept low energy and brain fog and fatigue and cognitive decline and poor recovery and all that. And they don't realize it's from low testosterone, but they also have systemic inflammation, microbiome imbalance, dysbiosis is called, poor you know, gut health in terms of the integrity of the gut wall, which leads to issues of blood sugar regulation as well. So all these factors connect together that ultimately predisposes this man to gaining fat, to obesity and gaining weight, and that creates this downward spiral, if you will. And so, you know, we could talk about chicken or the egg, which one came first. I think it's just all connected and all together. There's a confluence of problems. So we need to address all of it.
Yeah. So most men, I think, though, would be aware that testosterone impacts libido and sexual health. But testosterone also affects our mood, our drive, and sense of psychological well-being. Right. And low testosterone levels have even been associated with depression and anxiety. So testosterone often gets this bad rap, but it seems a fairly essential component of men's mental health.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, the overlooked part of it is what you just said, the effect on cognitive function, on mental acuity, concentration, focus, memory, all of these cognitive abilities that are directly tied to testosterone. And a lot of men will struggle there, and they think, oh, my sex life is fine, and they don't realize how far they've declined over time. It's a gradual slow decay that happens. And so it's not like women where one day their normal estrogen levels, and then they're suddenly menopausal or, you know, perimenopausal, and suddenly their hormones drop. It's a more insidious, gradual process for men. And this is why I really urge men to get tested, get all your hormones tested, look for inflammation, blood sugar markers, lipid markers, because so often guys say, I'm fine, I'm okay. You have Bob Harper, you know, the fitness trainer on the American TV show, The Biggest Loser, who trains for a living. He teaches people how to lose weight and get in shape. And at the age of 51, he had a massive heart attack out of nowhere that almost killed him. You think you're healthy, but oftentimes you're not.
And men are notoriously reluctant to get these tests done. Is that one of the reasons why this men's health crisis is? I mean, are we partly to blame here? Is the reason why the men's health crisis that it doesn't get the attention to it deserves? Is that down to us too?
Yeah, I think we're greatly to blame. I think you're spot on. You know, the concept, if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of mentality. Yeah. Men are stubborn creatures. We don't ask for directions. We'll figure it out ourselves. We'll wait till it's falling off before we get help. There needs to be a real shift in the paradigm around men's health of being much more proactive, more intentional, and not wait until it's too late, which guys often do. Women are, I believe, are a little more proactive, and they take charge more. They get tested more, more preventive care. Men in general are very poor about that.
I see that all the time as with my clients as a personal trainer. Yeah. The ladies consistently, I mean, even if they fail, they will make another stab at it. They don't give up. They want to keep trying, and that is not the case. The men do need encouragement. I mean, like yourself, very often I'll get a lot of my clients are there just because the wife has sent them to me.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Looking at this aspect of mental health again, then, so and how testosterone might affect that. We've got 40% of men over the age of 45 are experiencing low testosterone levels, and this might explain why in recent sociological studies, middle-aged men report, well, actually the lowest levels of life satisfaction and the highest levels of anxiety. And then more worrying still, we've got the middle-aged men are the most likely to commit suicide of any of the age groups. Yeah. Do you think there's this relationship with low testosterone there as well?
I do. And I want to briefly touch on the statistic you share, because this is such a key point that gets missed. The statistic of, 40% over 40, 45% of men over 40 have low testosterone.
Yeah.
But let's clarify for a second, what does low testosterone even mean? And this is where I really challenge our system. And you can look at the American Urologic Association and the European Urologic Association and the Endocrine Society and all these different organizations. They're defining low testosterone at this ridiculously low bar of typically somewhere around 300 nanograms per deciliter. And I know units may be different there in the UK.
It's but suffice it to say,
Yeah, but my big problem with this is that they set such ridiculously low levels that they're talking about like medical hypogonadism is what, this goes back to insurance reimbursement and coverage here in the US. I know it's a little different there in UK, but I will challenge that and say, so do you mean to tell me that a man that has a total testosterone of 302, we haven't even touched on free testosterone, but are you trying to tell me that a man with a total testosterone of 302 is normal, is optimal, is okay compared to a guy with 298? Suddenly now, oh no, he now qualifies. I call BS on the entire construct around what is considered low testosterone. And I would argue that it needs to instead be, what do my levels need to be so that I'm optimized at my best? Mm-hmm. And so that my...
Where would you consider that to be then?
Yeah, great question. And so now let's talk about total versus free. So total testosterone is all the testosterone molecules floating in your bloodstream. And that's what's typically measured is the concentration of testosterone in your bloodstream. But most of that testosterone, about 98% of that, is bound to proteins in the blood, either albumin or SHBG. Mm-hmm. And when testosterone is bound to a protein in the bloodstream like that, it becomes now this big fluffy molecule that can no longer get into a cell. If it can't get into a cell, it can't bind to an androgen receptor, which is the transporter to take it to the nucleus to make the magic happen. Mm-hmm. So if it's bound to a protein, nothing happens. And so the key here is the testosterone that's actually bioavailable to actually have a real effect is the free testosterone. And that's what oftentimes doesn't even get measured. But that is the critical number that guys need to be looking at. Now, free testosterone.
So when you talk about effects, we're talking about the anabolic effects that we might all from testosterone, the ability to build muscle, sexual health,
all of the benefits we just talked about, the cognitive function, the mood, the energy, the metabolism, the blood sugar control, the anti-inflammatory, the cardiovascular benefits, the muscle, the sex, the bones, all of that happens by testosterone getting into a cell of any kind, going to the nucleus of the cell, which is where the DNA transcription occurs, where protein enzyme production occurs. That's where we have an actual physiologic effect of this hormone. Free-floating testosterone in the bloodstream doesn't do anything at all until it gets into a cell. Mm-hmm. Only 2%, give or take, of your testosterone is free-floating. 98% is bound to proteins. So think about that. You're measuring... You're measuring a metric, a number that doesn't really even matter. And so I would argue respectfully that number one, total testosterone doesn't matter. It's free testosterone that matters. And number two, the levels that have been set are for clinical hypogonadism. And I would submit that men don't want to just be non-hypogonadal. They want to be optimized. We want to be able to function at the highest level. And we know that from a cardiovascular standpoint, the higher your testosterone, numerous studies show this. I have a video on YouTube where I share the actual published studies on this. The higher your endogenous normal testosterone levels, the lower your cardiovascular risk. Mm-hmm. Longevity is tied directly to how high is your testosterone level endogenous, like your normal production. And so this is why I believe that free testosterone should be the,
would
the
that,
target.
Would that same link be there then with the exogenous testosterone?
Well, that's where it has not been clarified. So there's not a study that shows if I give you this dose versus that dose, we have a difference in survival or cardiovascular risk. And so I want to be careful. That's where we start to get into causation versus correlation. Mm-hmm. What we know is when we have optimized testosterone levels, we know that brings inflammation down. It brings blood sugar control into better ranges. It improves insulin sensitivity, it's called. Mm-hmm. It improves metabolism. It helps us build muscle, which helps us burn fat. We have lower estrogen in relation to testosterone now. Cognitive function improves, drive, motivation improves, quality of life improves, bone health improves. And what do you know? Heart disease decreases, longevity improves. And so this is why I think it's also important to be looking at the free testosterone and optimizing it. And so what does that mean? So here in the U.S., we have different units, of course, but here in the U.S., generally I aim for a target of 20. Okay. Now that is picograms per milliliter. I want to clarify, the units are going to be different there in London. So you can use any calculator, even AI can help you convert that over. But that's at the high end of the range. You know, it's funny when you look at a lab slip, you look at the right side of the page and you'll see this range over there. And as a doctor for 20 years, 25 years in urology, I was trained just, oh, look at that range. And if you're in that range, then tell the patient they're normal. But remember those, the three massive studies that I talk about over and over again have shown that testosterone levels worldwide are half what they were 20 years ago, right?
Yeah.
That's not debated.
So everything shifted.
You're exactly right. That reference range is the average of the population. And the last update was 2017. There was a study that got released in 2017, the Travison study, that all labs are using as the baseline, quote, average testosterone. But we know that's 50% lower than they were 20 years ago. And so they've just lowered the bar, lowered the bar, lowered the bar. And now we say, oh, we're in the range, so we're normal. Well, BS. And so the 20 picograms per milliliter that I aim for, Anthony, is on the high end of that range, intentionally and rightfully so for that reason. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We mentioned that one of the factors that can inhibit our free testosterone levels is these binding to certain proteins, one of them being, as you mentioned, sex hormone binding goblin, SHBG. Now, from my understanding, with age, SHBG also increases in men.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. So guys are always looking for the holy grail of, you know, how do I affect this SHBG that is affecting our testosterone levels. And I understand, you know, why men are wanting to do that. The reality of it is that there's not many things that can lower SHBG. You know, unfortunately, insulin resistance, poor blood sugar control, obesity lowers SHBG. That's not what we want, right?
Right.
We know that low thyroid can lower SHBG.
That's interesting.
That's not what we want either. Yeah. But one of the best ways, and there are things that you could look at like ashwagandha, maybe boron, maybe a little bit here and there, stinging nettle root. There's some herbals that can maybe lower it a little bit. Some studies say yes, some say no. But the best way to lower SHBG is testosterone.
Yeah.
When we give TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, when we get optimized testosterone, that will actually directly lower SHBG, interestingly enough. And so there are not great ways to directly lower SHBG other than just fixing the testosterone itself.
Looking at that normal range of testosterone, is it possible to be within that normal range or perhaps even in the middle of it and still not experience any symptoms of low testosterone because you may have high free testosterone?
Is that a possibility? Right. Great point. So I've seen men with a total testosterone of 1,000 nanograms per deciliter, which is on the higher end of the range for us. I know it's different units there in London, excuse me. but then their free testosterone is in the tank is like 3 when it should be again be like 20. And so that mm-hmm. can simply be from high SHBG. I see men with a total of 400, which is very low, it almost qualifies for quote hypogonadal, but I would say very, very low. But because they have such low SHBG, their free is 18, which is actually pretty darn good. Hmm. And so this is why the total just doesn't tell the whole story. You got to look at the free.
I mean, exactly personally, that's I'm in the middle of the range. And with NMOL, how it's measured here, of course. But not experiencing don't believe I'm experiencing any of the symptoms of low testosterone. So I was wondering, perhaps this the free testosterone levels are working fine, and I'm still able to, I'm continuing to put on muscle mass, even though I did my own personal transformation when I was 43 in middle age. So I'm wondering if perhaps that might be the case on a personal note. But one of the things that strikes me then is, so why is free testosterone, Is it because it's difficult to measure that free
it's
testosterone?
Actually not. It's actually not. You know, when we do blood draw, we do a free and total testosterone every single time. Super easy. There are a couple different ways of doing it. And we have labs here in the U.S. LabCorp and Quest are our two biggest labs that we have. Mm-hmm. And they have different ways of actually measuring SHBG. One is through and they're both direct ways of measuring it, but one is through an immunoassay, I think it is. And the other one that's LabCorp is through a direct immunoassay. The Quest one is like through an immunochemiluminescence or it's mass spectrometry. To make it simple, two different direct ways of measuring it, but then you can also calculate it as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a way by simply taking the total combined with the albumin number, you can actually come up with and figure out what that number is for free if you have albumin and SHBG. And so it's not difficult. It's a lack of understanding, and it's looking at the wrong metric.
You also mentioned this primary hypogonadism, and but there is a distinction, isn't there, between when the testes themselves are the problem and the causes are non-gonadal. There's a difference between these two, isn't there?
Yeah, you're
exactly how right. How do you know?
Yeah, you're asking a great question. So the way your body makes testosterone, 99% plus is made by the testicles, and a small fraction is made by the adrenal glands, but nonetheless, consider it mostly from the testicles. Mm-hmm. And the signal to the testicles comes from the brain. Luteinizing hormone, LH, is the hormone from the anterior pituitary gland that tells the brain, tells the testicles, maybe that is our brain, right? It tells the male brain.
Pretty close.
Right? For you to slip. To produce testosterone. Now, above that, there's the hypothalamus, which produces LHRH, which is the releasing hormone that tells the pituitary to release LH to tell the testicles. And so there's this pathway.
This feedback loop,
Feedback loop, negative feedback, where the testosterone will then feedback on the hypothalamus to turn off the signal to the pituitary. It'll turn off the pituitary as well so that you're not producing that signal. Okay, so that's how your body normally works. Mm-hmm. By simply measuring testosterone levels with LH levels, you can get a really good idea of what's the problem. Is it the pituitary not sending the signal like it's supposed to, or which is secondary hypogonadism, or is it primary, which is the testicle not producing testosterone like it's supposed to? The reality of it is, you know, when I was back in my urology residency back in the Paleozoic era learning this stuff, we always thought it was either or, which one is it, and you treat them so differently. But the reality of it, the truth of it is, clinically, most guys, it's a combination of both. In most guys, it's a little bit of semantics. It almost doesn't even matter. Now, when might it matter? It might matter if you have a young male and they have low LH, low signal from the brain, which is secondary hypogonadism. The brain is not sending the signal. The testicles are ready to go. Tell me when you need me. I'm ready. But it's not getting the signal. That's where you can use things like HCG, which acts just like LH, to stimulate testosterone production. That's a great situation where that information comes in handy. Most of the time, clinically, almost 30 years of doing this, I find it's a combination of both, and it almost doesn't really matter for most men. If a man is looking to have children, if he's still in his fertile years where he wants to preserve sperm, then we don't want to give testosterone. And so HCG and or an estrogen blocker, a selective estrogen receptor blocker like Clomid or enclomiphene might be a good choice instead.
As a personal trainer, people are always coming to me talking about well, you know, should I get on to TRT? And my first thing is, well, get the test done, first of all.
Yeah, sure.
You know, find out what your levels are. Yeah. If there's some obvious, you know, if obvious stressors, well, then you might want to be thinking about that first of all.
Sure.
And I suppose looking at some of these societies that we've mentioned, and in Britain we have the Society for Endocrinology, and they've issued guidelines about how they recommend testosterone replacement therapy. Mm-hmm. And they do suggest that the lifestyle interventions, such as, for example, losing weight, should be the first line of treatment for symptoms of low testosterone.
Yes.
Without sort of immediately jumping on the TRT. I mean, do you agree? I mean, is that
great?
Is that a good place to start?
Great topic. I love this. Yeah, so great point. Common situation that guys are dealing with every single day without even realizing it, and that is stress. So I'm talking about stress from work, from business, from leading a team, running a business, sales numbers, etc., employee issues, spouse issues, house issues, kid issues, finances, you name it, life, right?
Everything we go through, life.
Right. Another big stressor is poor sleep, and one begets the other too. Stress crushes sleep, and poor sleep makes you more stressed. There was a great study out of the University of Colorado here in the U.S. where they looked at college boys, and they measured their testosterone after one night of sleep deprivation. Their testosterone levels were 50% lower overnight, just like that.
And that's in young men.
That's just one night, exactly. So the effect that stress has on our testosterone levels is dramatic. The effect that stress has on our nervous system, obviously, on our other hormones, on our metabolism, on blood sugar, stress, and that's directed through our hormone called cortisol, our stress hormone, and we can actually measure it. So one of the big things we do is we do cortisol testing to actually measure your stress. And I can't emphasize enough how important this is, because we're talking about lifestyle ways of improving testosterone. One of the best ways to do that, absolutely, is to reduce stress, to reduce the effect that stress is having on our body. And what you measure, you can manage, of course. And so it starts with testing. So yes, test your hormone levels. Yes, test your markers of inflammation and blood sugar and lipids and everything else we're talking about. You can measure cortisol numbers as well and see how stress is affecting that. So it's a really big point here. And so yes, I'm a huge proponent of all of these lifestyle factors that directly impact testosterone. So stress is the biggest one. Sleep is right up there with it as well. Most men don't appreciate the incredible value that sleep has in repair and recovery and optimizing our hormones and our metabolism. You know, when you go to the gym, you don't build muscle. Mm. I know guys take that little sound bite and they've given me a hard time about it and called me a quack. But it's true. When you're working out, you're not building muscle. You're actually stressing and tearing down muscle. You build muscle when you recover. In the recovery time, right? And the best recovery time is while you're sleeping. And so this is why I argue that you can't build muscle if you're not sleeping. I don't care how much you're working out in the gym. And so this is really a testament to what you're saying, that there's so much when it comes to lifestyle that can impact our hormone levels. Mm-hmm. Sedentary lifestyle. Most guys just need to get off their ass and start doing some real work and lifting heavy weights, going for a walk or a jog. That's one thing. That's okay. Over the age of 50, it needs to be more and more strength training, less and less of the cardio, treadmill, running, jogging. It's not going to get you anywhere. Mm-hmm. The long distance endurance racing doesn't help your testosterone either. It's the strength training, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That stuff will increase your cortisol levels, for example.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so, yes, I'm a huge believer, proponent. I agree with you 100% that all of these aspects of lifestyle are so important when it comes to testosterone. But I'm gonna add an asterisk to it.
Yeah.
If you were to take a guy, the typical guy, you could picture him. He is the entrepreneur. He's running a small business. He's stressed beyond belief. He's not sleeping. He's burning both ends of the candle. He's eating like crap, not exercising, doing everything wrong. And his testosterone free is, let's say, 2. I see this all the time.
Yeah.
If we were to have him religiously do everything we talk about for 6 months, hit the gym, eat perfect, sleep, stress, toxins, you name it, micronutrients, all of that religiously for 6 months. First of all, no guy's going to do that, right? No guy's going to be compliant like we want them to. What I find is they're still not where I want them to be. Yes, your testosterone is improved. Yes, I do see it make a difference. Mm-hmm. But what I tend to see more often than anything, Anthony, is guys start to lose the key word that I love to emphasize here, and that is momentum.
Right.
And this is why I love to start testosterone therapy early.
Okay.
I'm not here to say that the lifestyle stuff isn't worth anything. It's a waste of time. Just let me give you a bunch of drugs. Let me give you a bunch of pharmaceuticals. Yeah. Not at all. But I believe it helps build momentum. It helps get your energy. It gives your confidence. It gives your drive. So now you're like, let's freaking go. Let's hit the gym. Let me focus on work so I can be more productive during the day. So now I can go to bed when I'm supposed to and know that I've gotten I've been more efficient, got my work done. It gets you in the right direction to where now I believe men are more compliant on the lifestyle side, which I believe is so important as well.
And that's what you've experienced with your clients, with your patients. Yeah. Because I would have sort of thought it might be sort of one of these chicken or egg situations that on the one hand, it might create momentum. On the other hand, it might be, well, okay, I'm feeling brilliant. I don't need to do anything. Yeah. I'm just going to carry on as I was. I'll work even longer hours.
You know, when I was in my urology practice, 25 years in traditional healthcare before I left to launch Gapping Institute, I would see this over and over again, at least several times a day. Men would come to see me, new patient. I'm on testosterone replacement therapy. I started at the ridiculous T clinic down the street in the corner. They're giving me shots, you know, and I still feel like crap.
Yeah.
And I check their levels. Their levels are pretty decent. Very common, and that's understandable. And for a long time, I didn't know why. I was like, let me just give you more testosterone. I didn't know. I thought I was the men's health expert as a urologist. I didn't know shit back then. Mm-hmm. But what I recognize now is so important is, again, gut health, stress, sleep, inflammation, blood sugar control, nutrition, fitness, toxins, micronutrients, immune system, all of these are ingredients to this cake that we're building, so to speak, or baking, so to speak. And hormones are one part, one ingredient in that cake that you're baking.
Yeah.
And people are like trying to just go straight for the frosting, like just give me the sexy peptides and I'll skip all the stuff and all those ingredients that matter so much. So to your point, coming full circle, it is chicken or the egg. It's all of it together that's so important. And so testosterone is just one piece of it. And any guy who's come to me saying, can I just get testosterone? I actually turn him away because no, it's not about just giving you testosterone. It's so much more than that.
And it is an important decision, I'm assuming, you know, to undergo TRT because it's unlikely you're going to come off. I mean, once you're on, you're going to be feeling great. I can't imagine why you would come off.
My joke here is you stop testosterone whenever you want to feel like crap again. Whenever you want to feel like crap again, just stop it and you'll you're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Most guys who ask that question on the front end very quickly pivot the question to, you're not going to ever make me stop this, are you? Because it provides such incredible – it puts you physiologically where you're supposed to be in the first place.
Yeah.
And with all the endocrine disruptors surrounding us in our environment, it's tough to get there on your own.
Yeah. And I suppose, as you said, the momentum's created. If testosterone is linked to our drive, then the drive to get better is going to be there. I can certainly see that.
Yeah.
I'm
sorry to interrupt you. I was just going to say, it's not a pharmaceutical. We're not talking about drugs here. We're talking about natural bioidentical hormones that your body is just not making like it's supposed to. I'm not talking about pushing a drug. Yeah. Mm.
I suppose having sort of competed in natural bodybuilding and let's face it, the bodybuilding world is the non-natural bodybuilding world. I mean, there's a death every year of one famous bodybuilder or not. And I'm assuming that's just down to abuse.
It's also the level, the degree of androgen stimulation that we're giving. So I mentioned earlier that when I look at testosterone, I care about free testosterone. And I'm aiming for somewhere around 20 picograms per milliliter, give or take. Yeah. Okay. To give you a general perspective of the bodybuilding world, like where they're taking anabolics, they may be getting a free testosterone of 200, like exponentially different, like not even in the same ballpark. So I'm looking, I like to say, I'm trying to make you a man. I'm not trying to make you a Superman.
Yeah.
And there's a big difference, a big distinction. And we're trying to get physiologic benefits without going too far to the extreme. And that's where you hear about these bodybuilders who drop dead at the age of 50 out of nowhere. It's because too much of a good thing can actually be harmful.
Yeah, so they've taken super physiological levels of testosterone.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And guess what that triggers in your body? One word. Stress.
Stress, yeah. Yeah, that's circling right back to that again. We mentioned the, you know, there's different ingredients for the cake. And if we were looking at sexual health as the ingredients there, well, I believe one of the things you've spoken about is the importance of nitric oxide. What's the importance and role of nitric oxide, for example, in sexual health and erectile dysfunction?
Sure. So nitric oxide is a hormone that we can actually measure with salivary strip testing. You can actually measure your levels. Nitric oxide is a key hormone for our vascular health. It helps our blood vessels expand. It helps improve blood flow. Yep. And that's good for heart health for sure. It's good for cognitive function, cognitive health. It's good for muscle build, but it's also good for sexual health as well. And when you think of the, you know, most guys will immediately think of Viagra, Cialis, these drugs, these pharmaceuticals that can help men improve performance. What those drugs are doing is actually increasing nitric oxide levels locally there at the penis to improve blood flow to stimulate an erection. So that's what those drugs are doing. And so we know that nitric oxide production is typically from the blood vessel itself, and that could be directly affected by poor blood sugar control, for example. So when you have insulin resistance, that directly impacts your body's production of nitric oxide. And so this is why I like to correlate what you're eating, your nutrition, your stress, your sleep, inflammation, hormones are all directly affecting blood sugar levels, which is directly affecting sexual performance. And so this is the connection why it's not just a matter of giving you the blue pill and some testosterone and say, have a good day. It's addressing the underlying cause. And again, we go back to that cake that we're trying to bake. Mm-hmm. And blood sugar control is such a big part of that because it directly affects those hormones.
So testosterone is obviously the hormone that gets all the attention for obvious reasons. But so then what are the other hormones we need to be looking at? Yeah. What else would you be testing for?
Perfect. Testosterone, nitric oxide is a big one. Thyroid is a big hormone that we should talk about as well. And thyroid is not just a hormone for women. So often it's thought of as just the female hormone. Guys don't need to worry about it. But it's an incredibly important hormone because thyroid helps drive metabolism. It drives energy. It's important for cognitive function. It's important for hair, skin, and nails, for hot and cold tolerance. It's important for immune function. It also directly controls the gut. When you have issues with a hypothyroid or thyroid hormone production, it affects gut health and vice versa. The gut can affect the thyroid directly as well. So there's a real close connection there. And so thyroid hormone is very similar to testosterone in the benefits that it provides. And most men don't even look at it, or they're just looking at the signal. So the signal from the brain is TSH, just like testosterone we talked about, LH. For thyroid, it's TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone coming from the pituitary. It tells the thyroid gland in your neck to produce T4. T4 is often measured by a lot of doctors, and I will argue that it's actually the wrong metric to be looking at as well. It's not the active hormone. It has some minimal effect, but the real biologic effect of thyroid, the real benefits of thyroid hormone come when T4 gets converted peripherally throughout your body into T3. T3, and that's just simply how many iodine molecules are attached to it. So when your body removes an iodine, it becomes T3. T3 is the active form of thyroid hormone that you need to be measuring. So free T3 is a number that every guy should be checking as it relates to thyroid hormone. And that's the number that I find is often very, very low. There's also another hormone related to this called reverse T3, which is triggered by stress or toxins or inflammation or nutrient deficiencies, where your body takes the T4 and converts it into the wrong hormone, reverse T3, which is like, it's like glue in the keyhole. It's blocking T3 from doing its job. So those are key hormones to be tracking around thyroid. You know, growth hormone. Growth hormone is a key hormone for repair and recovery and deep sleep. You know, the key restorative stage of our sleep happens in the first half of the night, and that's the deep sleep time. And the biggest trigger for that, the biggest hormone trigger for that is growth hormone. Over the age of 40, our levels gradually decline by about 1 to 1.5% every year. And I see so many men with very low growth hormone levels, and you can measure it with IGF-1 as a biomarker, which is made by the liver, triggered by growth hormone, and it's the best indirect way to measure growth hormone. Really key hormone that every guy needs to be checking. Estrogen. We talked earlier about how important estrogen is. Estradiol is the one to be looking at, and that is one that we don't want to block. It's like Goldilocks. You don't want too low, you don't want too high kind of thing. So estrogen is a key one as well. Then finally, I'll finish with vitamin D. It's actually not a vitamin. It's a hormone. Very important for energy, for immune system, for bone health. You know, there was that weird time 5 years ago in this world where things were very different. And we found that the outcomes from all of that were dramatically impacted by vitamin D levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so survival difference simply by having optimized vitamin D levels. And so those are some of the hormones we look at that I think are really important that every guy needs to get checked.
So the guy that's going to to get his health checked from his local doctor, you know, they might look at blood pressure. They may look at his cholesterol. What are the health markers he should be looking for? What should he be trying to get tested for?
Yeah, so I'd be looking at when it comes to, and I look at like five general categories. So first, we'll look at hormones. We've already talked about a lot of the hormones I mentioned. I would add DHEA sulfate to that list as well. Okay. That's really just a good start for hormones. When we look at cardiovascular health, most doctors are just looking at, you know, the drill, total cholesterol, LDL, HDL, triglycerides. Yeah, your numbers are a little high. Maybe you need a statin, you know, nonsense. You need to be looking at ApoB, which is apolipoprotein B. It is the most important marker for lipid health. LP little a, that looks like capital L, little p, and then a little a in parentheses. That's a subtype of LDL that's inherited by your parents. And when that's elevated, it dramatically increases your risk. I call it the Bob Harper lab because that's the one that Bob Harper had. That was his issue. LDL particle number or particle count is actually much more important and predictive of your risk than LDL cholesterol. So LDL cholesterol is simply measuring the amount of cholesterol inside your LDL particle. It's the concentration of cholesterol. We know that the number of actual particles matters so much more. I call them like submarines in your bloodstream. More submarines, more potential harm. And so LDL-P is the particle number, way more important than LDL-C. So those are some of the cardiovascular markers. When it comes to blood sugar control, I mentioned metabolic health. You want to be looking at fasting insulin, which is a short-term marker of metabolic control, metabolic health. And hemoglobin A1C is a longer-term measure of blood sugar control. You can also look at an insulin resistance score the most labs will give you based on triglycerides. And uric acid is also a great marker of metabolic health as well. It's not just for gout. It could also be used for looking at metabolic control. Then looking at inflammation. I talk so much how important inflammation is. You can measure CRP is a great one to look at this. Ferritin is a great marker for inflammation.
Those are the inflammatory cytokines.
Yeah, exactly. We're looking at different inflammatory cytokines. Ferritin is a good one. And then also LPPLA2. It's a vascular inflammation marker that most doctors don't ever check. So those are some good markers for inflammation. And then finally, nutrient levels. You know, I think one of the big ones here would be homocysteine is a marker of, it's called methylation for those of you out there. It's really a marker of cellular efficiency, how well your body methylates, which is a process that depends on B-complex vitamins, folate. And so if your homocysteine level is high, and typically I use a cutoff of around 12 or so, then you need to look at, are you missing some key micronutrients that may be affecting that pathway of methylation? B12 is important. Folate is important. Magnesium is a key micronutrient that most people are deficient on. So you do want to be checking magnesium as well. So those are just some basic labs that I would argue that most doctors don't look at any of those I just mentioned.
Yeah.
And that's the real problem. They look at the basic stuff that, you know, basic metabolic profile, electrolytes, CBC. They don't help you much.
Well, I mentioned that's, you know, in the introduction, that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to get you on the show, was because I knew from the research that you took a really comprehensive approach to men's health. And, you know, you've mentioned all some of the basic things we should do and some of the more advanced things we should do. Just perhaps, you know, to sort of finish up and look to the future, there's obviously technology is changing all the time. We've got these weight loss drugs, for example, you know, wearable tech. You mentioned amazing peptides. Things are changing all the time. What are you excited about? What's your vision? What's your future for the vision of men's health, of optimal men's health?
Yeah, I love that there's finally this awareness around data. And right. I am obsessed with metrics and data and how do we track results to know that what we're doing is actually working? How do we find the key underlying issues that matter? I love that there's suddenly this awakening, this explosion in the media and the world about data. Apple just came out and said they're going to be the next doctor of health, or I forgot what their quote was. And I'll call BS on that.
Yeah.
Because I think just data alone is nothing more than noise. And it's like information. Like the last thing I want is another blog. I don't need another blog article to read. You know, I don't need another YouTube video to watch on health. There's too much noise and information out there. What I'm excited about is that we're entering a world of precision where now it's how do I take these metrics and data points and actually apply them to me personally? It's the precision around personalization. Mm-hmm. And around, you know, understanding what's right for me. And I like to say one size fails all, because what's right for Anthony is very different than what's right for Doc Tracy and what's right for Joe and Bob, et cetera. It's different. And so instead of going to Reddit or Twitter or Instagram to find out what the influencer is telling you should be doing, it's a matter of testing your own body and seeing what your body needs. And then finally, it's, you know, it's this exciting world of longevity. Mm-hmm. And you're hearing a lot of, you know, influencers and a lot of noise and public policy and websites and salespeople and snake oil sales and you yeah. name it around
yeah,
longevity.
It's all out
and,
there.
Yeah, and it's getting out of yeah. control. And I want to clarify that, you know, to me, I'm not unrealistic to suggest that I'm going to be able to help you live to 150. It's ridiculous. It's preposterous. It is at some point in the future, maybe that's going to be the case. Right now, we're making incremental changes, incremental improvements. What I'm more focused on specifically is health span.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
when I talk about longevity, it's health span. How can I get you to live to 100 and then drop dead in your sleep at 100 and you lived an amazing, awesome, high quality life optimized to its fullest? Yeah. That to me is really what I think the focus should be on, is how do we improve health span?
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And then if we more. Have to get a few extra years, so be
yeah,
it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. As I mentioned, my father died. His last 5 years were spent in hospital. He was only 85 and really he had not really managed his diabetes very well when my mother died. And you know, it was, I felt to a large extent it was avoidable, but you know, those last 4 or 5 years were not health span. And yes, I'm interested in longevity, but I'm more interested in, you know, how those years live out yeah. and I want to be strong and I want to be fit and That's I want right. to be healthy and I want to be optimal. And I want to be there for my grandson, like yourself. We mentioned, you know, your mission. Well, you know, that's one of my personal missions to keep yeah. looking into the these areas as well. Is that so? I think you're absolutely hit the nail on the head there. Health span it is.
Yeah, and I think that there's this obsession right now with, you know, don't die and live forever. And I don't know that most people are wanting that. They want to have an amazing high quality of life and perform at the highest level right now and enjoy yeah. their family, enjoy their kids, be able to, you know, focus on what's important to them right now. I'm not focused on 50 years from now. I'm focused on today, right now. And 100%. That's what I really try to emphasize.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not massively interested in how I look when I'm 80. I want to know what's going on now. Yeah. With you all the way, Tracy, thank you so much. Thank you for your time. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Absolutely. I'd like to share something for your listeners. I'd like to give
yeah,
away
Yeah, please
a gift.
Do.
I like to give away freeze. So I like to share a copy of my best-selling book, Male 2.0. I'm going to give yeah. you my ultimate peptide guide. I'm going to give you my high-performance health handbook and a bunch of other freebies.
Wow, how generous.
Just simply go to gapininstitute.com/launch. That's GAPIN institute.com/launch, LAUNCH. and just enter your information, get a bunch of free stuff from me, and hopefully it'll provide some free value.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tracy. I wish you all the best. Get some more vitamin D.